Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
I'm News Channel 5 Sports Director Andy Baskin out here in the Berea Complex for the Cleveland Browns. We are joined by WTAM Browns beat reporter Andre Knott, also our third amigo.
I hate hearing old clips of myself. While I might be making a great point, all I can hear is the sound of me trying not to pass gas on air.
Today, the Browns, this is big news because we are definitely going to see an ownership change here very soon.
Yes, we're going to see changes here like we've never seen here before. I think since this team has been here, the Lerner family's been underneath it. But I think obviously for Randy Lerner, he ended up being the owner of a team probably before he was ready to do it. And I think when you see that, I think that kind of plays into why the team was ran the way it was.
In reality, Randy was never ready to own the Browns. And barely even seemed willing when he took over. In his mind, Randy had tried everything to fix the franchise. I mean, he hired and fired 5 head coaches, 4 general managers, and countless front office personnel and players. But his attention was elsewhere at this point. It was with the team he truly wanted to own in the English Premier League.
The ball in from Whittingham! 2-1 to Aston Villa!
Lerner bought Aston Villa in 2006, and then, I'm sensing a trend here, ran them into the ground too, and made himself an enemy to an entire country. Nobody, I mean nobody, hates like soccer hooligans. But Terry Pluto knows Randy actually succeeded with the Browns in the way that mattered most to him. He kept his word.
You know, the word always was that after Al Lerner had passed away, that Norma Lerner, the wife, wanted Randy to keep the team for 10 years. He goes, and if you look at it, it sold 10 years later.
So in 2012, a decade after the passing of his father, Randy sold the team he never wanted for the astronomical sum of $1 billion. And who is the man willing to put up a billy for the team? Enter Jimmy Haslam, a man determined to become the Jerry Jones of the AFC. There was not a problem this guy couldn't solve with his deep pockets. Jimmy, the unstoppable force, meet the immovable losing object, the Cleveland Browns. Put on your trucker hat, kids. We're filling up at Flying J and driving to Brownstown.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
32 team representatives unanimously approved the 58-year-old Tennessee businessman as the next owner of the Cleveland Browns. His first order of business, dealing with current Browns team president, Mike Holmgren.
That clip makes it sound like they took Mike Holmgren out back behind the equipment shed like old Yeller. But don't worry, he got off way easier than that. With the ownership change, Holmgren stepped down from his position as president at the end of the 2012 season, riding off into the sunset on his motorcycle. That was all well and good for the big show, but Mary Kay Cabot was more concerned about head coach Pat Shurmur, who still had to finish out the year.
He lands in Cleveland, and then all of a sudden, you have transfer of ownership, and that changes everything. He had a difficult start in that regard, and then there was a strike. You know, then, you know, he's trying to to coach a football team where Colt McCoy is hosting Camp Colts down in Texas because they can't practice. And so he had a lot of adversity that he had to deal with, and he was caught in the middle of a lot of things.
Weirdly, the sale gave Shermer and the Browns a little boost, and they rattled off a 5-6 finish after starting the season 0-5. I'm sure you're tired of hearing this, but 5-11 wasn't going to cut it. And Jimmy Haslam fired Pat Shermer and GM Tom Heckert at the end of the season. With Randy's final mistakes washed away, it was time for Jimmy to start fresh.
Well, optimism isn't near strong enough a word.
That's Browns reporter Zach Jackson.
It had gotten so bad with Randy Lerner that people just crowned the Haslams, right? They had had a small piece of the Steelers, who at the time and really still are in many ways the flagship franchise, the model franchise. You know, those reasons are why everybody was so excited.
Hey, that sounds good, right? Someone who knows what they're doing coming in from a rival franchise. Maybe still some of their mojo. Well, the Haslams weren't from the land. They didn't know about Polish boy sandwiches, the Muni lot, or Michael Stanley. Mike Polk wasn't sure a billionaire could ever truly understand Cleveland.
What baffles me is just the wealthy in general, and the ridiculously wealthy, and especially the ridiculously wealthy that were born that way. How are you supposed to make like decisions and have them make any sense? How are you supposed to have any concept about how a fan base in Cleveland feels or how important this kind of stuff is to them? It's like a boat for a rich guy that they buy to show off or to have something fun to do. So it's like when your decisions are being made in that way, I understand that it complicates things.
Now, the Haslams did try to involve themselves in the community. They immediately put money into the stadium and surrounding area.
They were not from here in the beginning, and they didn't have the same emotional connection to the Browns that they did to, like, the University of Tennessee. Very quickly after they got here, they realized the full impact of Cleveland Browns to the city of Cleveland and just how important it is to the fabric of this area in Northeast Ohio. They took it very seriously, and they became a part of it. Now they're Clevelanders, okay? And now this is more than just a business transaction for them. This is their heart and this is their soul. And I truly believe that.
Involved with the community? Great. Involved with the football team? Not so much. Haslam wanted to be a hands-on owner who helped make decisions. The one small problem being he didn't have any experience. They didn't let him touch anything over in Pittsburgh. But his willingness to jump into the limelight and his southern drawl drew comparisons to another big-shot owner who loved to meddle in the affairs of his team. Former Brown safety T.J. Ward knew two things about Haslam.
We was calling him the East Coast Jerry Jones, the way he moved around. He just had that, you know, that aura about him. When I think when I was on my way out, you know, they had the whole little love gas scandal or whatever. He was going through some stuff in court.
In 2013, right before Jimmy Haslam would start his first full season owning the Browns, the FBI executed a search warrant and affidavit detailing a 5-year fraud scheme against Pilot Flying J. This was, how do I say, not the fresh start anyone was hoping for. If the owner goes to jail, what happens to the Browns? Was the team going to get repossessed?
The day it happened, I have a friend who's used to be a government investigator. High up, been involved in a lot of big name investigations. I just called him up and said, hey, is this a big deal? And he goes, yeah, it's a real big deal. You know, it's a big deal because the IRS was along with them. And I said, well, what does that mean? He said, because that means they can pretty much take any document they want because you can claim anything as tax related. I said, well, what's going to happen? He said, well, I don't know. But typically in a company like this with the money that's involved, it'll go up the chain and it'll approach the highest levels, and at a certain point it will get to a level and it will stop, because typically somebody takes the fall and in exchange for taking the fall gets a pretty significant financial reward. That's the way he put it.
Pilot Flying J's president took the fall, and Jimmy came out of the scandal relatively unharmed, meaning not in prison. But it did reveal some seriously sick shit going on in his company. I mean, just listen to these tapes of his top Pilot Flying J executives.
Who buys the Raiders? I said, you think you're going to waste something that says Browns on it?
The scandal changed Haslam. No, he didn't start carrying the spirit of Christmas with him all through the year. But he did learn a valuable lesson.
It changed them in terms of their dealings with the media. When I first talked to Jimmy Haslam and D. Haslam, they said, we are going to be open. We are going to be transparent. We are going to be engaged. And after Pilot Flying J, they pulled back and went into a shell. They really went into a shell. And they just stayed out of the limelight. And they pulled together as a family to get through that family crisis that they had. It impacted the football team. They made some hiring decisions that weren't great.
Jimmy Haslam stayed in the Browns family shell to pick his first head coach, the offensive coordinator of the 07 Miracle team that won 10 games, Rob Chudzinski. Part of that may be Rob was the only person who'd agree to do it after the scandal and the firings and the decades of failure. But I digress. Aaron Shea thinks there was another guy that Jimmy should have hired that had a ties to the Browns as well.
Let me tell you something. Bruce Arians wanted this job. He wanted to come back to Cleveland. Like, truly, he wanted to come back to Cleveland. He goes, hey, go up and now I don't know. So I kind of give him not to come. Hey, Mr. Haslam, can I just talk real quick? I think the world of Bruce Arians. And they go, oh, it's so funny. I got a phone with Peyton Manning. He goes, he said the same thing. I said, B.A. is the smartest offensive coach I've ever been around. And I called B.A. back. I go, man, I think good. If the sheriff told him the same thing, we're good. And then he gets the puppet Chud. I'll listen to everyone.
Bruce Arians went on to win two AP Coach of the Year awards with the Cardinals and last year's Super Bowl with Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Chud, on the other hand, he started 3-2 behind three straight wins from third string quarterback and hometown hero Brian Hoyer. But then this happened.
He rolls out of the pocket and then he slides and gets hit by Kiko Alonso as he goes down. They fear it could be a torn up knee in there.
Chud won only one more game in 2013 with the patchwork quilt behind center. Hired because he made the potent 07 Browns offense hum, Chudzinski's team managed fewer than 20 points per game. That'll go for 27th out of 32 teams. After one season, he hadn't left an impression on the score sheet or fans. We asked basically everyone on this podcast about Chud, and most people didn't have anything at all to say. Andrew Siciliano had the most.
I got behind the Chud thing because I thought maybe it would help the offense. I mean, I don't know anymore.
After going 4-12 in his first season, Chud would have another opportunity to be memorable in his second. He's gone.
Coach Rob Chudzinski fired just after one season with the Cleveland Browns.
How do you have coaches you fire after 1 year? I mean, Rob Chudzinski, good coach or not, we can argue that till the end of our days, but he had three different starting quarterbacks, for God's sakes. He almost beat New England in New England with Jason Campbell. Then he gets fired after 1 year? I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, they never, ever were committed to a winning system.
Pat is right. How do you fire a coach after only a year? For what it's worth, Jimmy also fired the GM, Michael Lombardi, after 1 year with the team. He was Belichick's player personnel guy with the Browns back in the early 90s. And to put it plainly, he wasn't popular back then, and he sure as hell wasn't popular when he was rehired 20 years later. The NFL is finally back, and there's also finally no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet to find tickets. TickPick is your best choice to buy football tickets because they save you money by never charging any service fees. I mean, ever. Because TickPick, that's TickPick, got rid of all those awful service fees that the other ticket sites charge, which let them guarantee the best prices on all of their NFL tickets. Don't believe it? If you can find better prices for the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in the purchase price. That's right, 110% difference. TickPick is the exclusive ticketing partner for Brownstown and Blue Wire Network. I gotta go find some Browns tickets against the Steelers on Monday night to watch the Browns kick their tail. Visit TickPick.com/Brownstown today and use the promo code Brownstown to save $10 on your first order of NFL tickets. After 1 year, Haslam had fallen to the same trap Randy Lerner had in not keeping continuity. I mean, good teams don't fire everyone all the time. Actually, I'm a Browns fan. How the hell do I know what a good organization looks like? Let's ask Phil Dawson, who actually has been with a good franchise.
The first thing that struck me about San Francisco was the stability of the organization. They're one of those blue chip, blue blood organizations. And you walk in the front door and there's six Lombardi trophies staring at you. You're kind of like, whoa, they had their upstairs part of the organization squared away. They knew who they were. They knew how they did things. They knew what kind of players they wanted. That was a pretty stark contrast from my days in Cleveland, where it was one year we're going to play a 3-4, the next year we're going to play a 4-3. We're going to have a disciplinarian head coach. No, we're going to have a player-friendly head coach. I mean, it was just all over the map. And all of a sudden you get to San Francisco and it was just chill and stable and consistent.
Now, if you were drafted to the Browns, you know that inconsistency through and through. All you've ever known was dysfunction. TJ Ward saw every step of the vicious cycle of suck from the beginning. And first, you suck.
We would get our butts kicked week to week, and we still get so much love. Like, oh man, it was great, but at the same time, it was like, man, we shouldn't get this much love because we suck.
Then there's the infighting, and not just players, the coaches and front office too.
I'm hearing all these stories. I'm like, damn, this is what the NFL like? Y'all be fighting like this? Like, damn, like, we don't even fight like this in college. Y'all in the league fighting all this money. That frustration, man, that frustration. You get to pointing fingers and you didn't do this, you didn't do that.
Infighting in the locker room and the front office leads to low morale.
I think that really took a toll on us psychologically because, you know, we would lose and it'd just be like, damn, like, we can't sit in the house, like, drinking our sorrows away or partying our sorrows away, wherever it was when we was younger. You know, it's not New York or L.A. You know, Cleveland ain't that much to do. So we was finding stuff to do.
Low morale leads to mistakes on and off the field.
We were in New York and we were playing the Giants. So we go, we shopping, and we like, we get done. We got a certain amount of time. We like, okay, we cool. We gonna make it back. So we in the cab and we hit traffic. Boom. It's like bumper to bumper. So as soon as we hit it, we look at each other like, oh, we in trouble. We starting to sweat now. Cause we got a few miles to go. We like, we gonna have to get out and run. So mind you, we have all these bags in the trunk. So we would have got two pairs of shoes each. We have bought jeans and all types of stuff. So, so we like, we pay the taxi, man. We get our bags, get out the taxi, and we get to jogging on the freeway off ramp. And I'm telling you, this is not no jog. We like 3/4 speed almost. We finally get to the hotel. The meeting that started, I'll never forget. That was crazy. Never have done anything like that. Never since.
Okay, that was a very specific example. But the point stands. Mistakes lead to instability.
I was just waiting to get this contract over with to get somewhere else. You know, straight up, I'm not even gonna lie. And then I didn't even get offered. Like, I was like, okay, well, maybe if Cleveland offers something right, I'll come back. You know, I love the city. It's another new, what, GM or coach coming in.
Instability leads back to sucking. Now with a new head coach. The Haslams had owned the Browns for just over a year, but the constant churning of the front office had given them the awful results it took Randy Lerner years of terrible choices to achieve. Zach Jackson says each bad decision spiraled out into more bad decisions.
They had obviously hired the wrong people. They hadn't stuck with one thing. They didn't trust their own judgment, and they made such a series of bad decisions that it snowballed.
Then in 2014, Jimmy Haslam hired his third coach in 2 years since he bought the team, Mike Pett.
That I told the team afterwards, this is a pass-fail league, we failed.
That was, yet again, the first step in a new cycle of dysfunction. It would take a big change at the NFL draft to pull the Browns out of their death spiral.
With the 22nd pick in the 2014 NFL draft, the Cleveland Browns select Johnny Manziel. Quarterback, Texas A&M.
Oh, shit. We hit the draft stage one more time and make that money sign. That's next time on Brownstown. Brownstown is hosted and reported by me, Andre Knott. Produced and written by Harry Swartow and Peter Moses. Edited by Isabel Jocelyn. Music by Brian Decker. Production coordination by Devin Shepard. And production assistance by Mariam Khan, Michael Ehrlich, Shwetha Surendran, and Zach Jackson. Brownstown is a Blue Wire podcast and executive produced by Peter Moses and John Yells. See you next time.